auctionbytes.com. It's e-commerce industry soundbites.
This is Ina Steiner from Auction Bytes, and I'm joined by eBay Vice President of Trust and Safety, Matt Halperin, and the Senior Director of Global Marketplace Policy at eBay, Linda Talgo. Matt and Linda are joining me to talk about eBay's new enforcement around its seller non-performance policy. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
I wanted to give you the opportunity, Matt, to give a little background on what the seller non-performance policy and enforcement issues are.
Sure, thanks. I wanted to kind of run through a few of the reasons why we're doing this, and they're similar to what we went through in the town hall the other day. I mean, taking a big step back, you know, we see our role at eBay is to help ensure that the marketplace remains vibrant, remains growing, and doing whatever we can to keep that happening. And as we study reasons for growth and what happens to buyers who don't buy as much as they used to, it turns out that some of those reasons are around having bad experiences. And as we did that analysis, we learned that only 1% of our sellers actually end up driving about 35% of bad buyer experiences. That was a little bit surprising to us, and I think was kind of a call to action for us. And of course, if you think about that, the 1% of sellers that are doing this end up driving away buyers for the 99% of sellers that are doing a terrific job.
Right, and it's really these are all part of the eBay's kind of efforts to improve the buyer experience this year. Is that right?
Exactly. I mean, we think that improving the buyer experience is key to ensuring a healthy and growing marketplace. Really, unfortunately, I think that the large majority of sellers do a fantastic job, and they've been suffering a little bit more than maybe we knew as a result of the small minority who maybe haven't been doing as good a job.
Well, I wanted to actually ask you about the rules. eBay actually changed the rules about the impact of neutral feedback ratings. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I'd say we changed the rules as much as because we've always exercised judgment in when we take action on sellers. And in the past, a CSR will look at a seller's track record. They'll look at negs. They'll look at neutrals. They'll look at positives. They'll look at volume. They'll look at how long they've been on the site. I mean, there's a lot of factors that have been taken into consideration in the past. They've even read feedback comments in the past. And that's more when we weren't taking as heavy a hand to intervene, where now we think we have to take a heavier hand. And when we did the analysis, getting to your question around, why do we consider neutrals here, the analysis was pretty clear as well. And when I say analysis, we did quantitative research on hundreds of thousands of transactions and feedback comments. We did something we call text mining, positive comments, neutral comments, negative comments, to see what was really being said. And then, of course, we listened to the community. And the marketplace has changed, and the way the feedback system is used has actually changed over the years. And what we learned is that neutrals are increasingly and almost always used as a measure, as a sign of dissatisfaction with some part of the transaction. Not 100% of the time, but almost always, and far more so than it has been the case in the past.
Well, when you're counting neutrals as negatives, are you taking away buyers' choices when they leave feedback? If they're not leaving a negative, why are they leaving a neutral?
Yeah, and again, I would say we're not counting neutrals as negatives. We're doing an analysis and looking at the total measure of all the transactions that a seller has, what portion of them are a positive and therefore an indication of a positive buyer experience, and what portion are an indication of something other than a positive experience, something less than satisfied or dissatisfied. And And then we've said, okay, now let's identify the population of those that are fall below a certain level, that are, you know, 5% or 10% of neutrals plus negatives or item not received complaints, and said, you know, those are the ones that we know are driving a, you know, a 35 times rate of dissatisfaction, and those are the ones that we need to take corrective action on.
Some longtime sellers who have kept their positive feedback high are getting suspended for performance over the past 90 days. Do you think it's fair to limit or suspend these sellers based on a short period without taking the entire body of their work into account?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, actually, you know, fairness is an interesting thing. The question I have is what's fair for the buyers in that situation as well? Because we have to take, as you know, in the marketplace, a balanced perspective of looking at sellers and buyers. And if we find that a seller over a 90-day period has, you know, performed in the bottom 1% of sellers in how buyers are treated, that's a pretty severe situation that we do believe necessitates corrective action. We hope that seller, if they were a terrific seller for a long time, can modify their practices, change their behaviors to result in back in positive buying experiences. But we do think that if someone over a 90-day period has landed in that 1%, that we do need to do something to take care of the buyers and to take care of the other 99% of sellers who, you know, are losing bids because buyers are going away from having bad buyer experiences.
I've been reading a lot of on the boards and in our blog post comments about this issue, and some people are saying, you know, I met the terms that are outlined in my listing description. The buyer gave me a neutral because they thought it took too long even though it was clearly indicated in the listing, or they said they paid too much even though it was clearly indicated that that's the amount that this item would be would cost for shipping. So I guess I would ask, what is eBay doing to educate buyers who really may think, well, I don't think that this seller does deserve a negative, but, you know, I'm just a little frustrated that it took me a long time to get my item. What are you doing to educate buyers?
Yeah. You know, I'd say right now we are not changing the way we educate buyers. I think actually allowing buyers to express their, you know, levels and degree of satisfaction or dissatisfaction is appropriate. I'm not sure I want to tell buyers or silence buyers by, you know, kind of prescribing how they do it. Now, detailed seller ratings, we do a little bit of anchoring on what, you know, what's a 1, what's a 2, what's a 3, what's a 4, what's a 5. There's a little bit of language that's there to try to guide buyers. And with detailed seller ratings, I mean, I think we're very pleased with how those have worked out. I would say they've met our very high expectations for it was a very significant change to the feedback system. And you will see us move towards using DSRs in the seller non-performance policy when we're sure that we can get it right in terms of, you know, doing all the analysis. But using DSRs, you know, again, we want buyers to express themselves. We want them to tell us how happy they are or how not happy they are on a marketplace, because they have plenty of alternatives on the internet these days.
Do you have any sense of how detailed seller ratings might be used? Would you go by some kind of a percentage, or any thoughts on how that might work?
So we haven't made any decisions on that. Is the straight answer. I can speculate a little bit with you about how we might approach it. Which is that it would be similar to what we've done with item not received and conventional feedback, which is we'd look for a very small portion of the population in terms of the ratings given by buyers that's driving a highly disproportionate amount of bad buyer experiences, like a 1% kind of a number. And then I can imagine we might actually put out that number and say, here's what it is.
Would you ever consider doing that by category, since shipping really can be quite a hot topic in one, you know, a hot area in one category versus another? Some things are very easy to ship, some things are not.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's the kind of thing we struggle with all the time, and I would say we would consider it, and what we'd probably be balancing that against is just simplicity and complexity of messaging, because I think, you know, again, analytically, you're right. There are differences by category, and yet we don't want to go out with 25,000 different, you know, kind of thresholds for people to reach. So that's what we would debate, and I'm not sure where we would land. That's a good question.
Let me ask you, if one reason a buyer may give a seller a neutral is because they're afraid to leave a negative in fear of retaliatory feedback.
Yes, that's definitely true.
If eBay now considers neutrals as negs in enforcing this policy, because in the way I read the math, that's what's happening, then wouldn't buyers start to fear leaving a neutral? Why doesn't eBay just eliminate the neutral rating choice?
I'd come back on it and say it's not that eBay is considering a neutral a neg. It's that we're looking at the quantitative research, which shows that as you measure buyer satisfaction or dissatisfaction, a positive feedback is really the only measure of buyer satisfaction that's out there. And neutrals and negs, the vast majority of the time, are expressions of something other than buyer satisfaction. And so I wouldn't see a reason to eliminate neutral feedback. It's actually quite valuable for eBay to be able to listen to the buyer and see something other than positive feedback. I would like to comment, if I may, on part of your question, which is spot on, which is kind of like more buyers are leaving neutrals out of fear of retaliation from sellers. And I, if you remember in the opening, I said it turns out that the use of the feedback system has changed over time. And this is actually a rather important part of this. Sellers have always left negative feedback after a buyer has left negative feedback more than buyers have. In other words, you can call it retaliatory feedback. It's not always retaliatory. It might just be, buyer left their feedback second or seller left their feedback second. But sellers have always left it more often than buyers. But what's happened over the past few years is that it's increased from being a little more to many times more that sellers leave retaliatory feedback versus when buyers do. And so buyers more and more have felt uncomfortable leaving negative feedback, and they have moved to neutrals. And that's what the analytics say, and that's what the text mining of the feedback comments say about when you read the neutrals.
Well, it's ironic because I think this very policy would encourage sellers to hold off on leaving feedback until the buyer leaves the seller the feedback.
Yeah, I think that you're right in that, sellers have always, we've always taken action on sellers for their rate of dissatisfaction as we have measured it. And that has led sellers over the years to increasingly leave feedback second and leave negative feedback second or threaten to, or even some have it in their listings and they say they will, which is obviously a really not something that's good for the marketplace to see that there. That is another reason why you will see us move to DSRs, detailed seller ratings, because detailed seller ratings can be left in a way that the seller doesn't see them, so that we're hoping that that will get us even more honest feedback, which, again, will help the vast majority of our sellers. I think it's a bit unfortunate that, in the conversation we're talking so much about the 1%, and we have to remind ourselves that 99 out of 100 sellers are doing a great job, and they're actually suffering from the 1%. Buyers have been leaving the marketplace, we study, as a result of the actions primarily of the bottom 1% who eBay has allowed to, sell in this way in our marketplace. And we need to stop that. And as we stop that, I got to tell you, that means two things. Number one, it means more bids for the 99% of sellers, because those buyers are now going to bid on sellers' items, sellers who provide good buying experiences instead of bad ones. And number two, the 99% of sellers are going to benefit from more buyer retention in the marketplace. Fewer buyers leaving or telling their friends, don't go to eBay because I had a bad experience. They're going to be having great experiences and telling their friends that they had a great experience. And guess who wins from that? I mean, the marketplace wins, the sellers win because they're going to have more demand. I've gotten a lot of emails from sellers who have said, thank you so much. It is about time. We've been waiting for eBay to take actions like this for a long time. We've been getting, you've been letting it go on too long, but it's about time, and we're glad you're doing it.
Right, and I think that feedback has always been extremely controversial whenever it comes up. And one thing that was highlighted for me was a recent survey that AuctionBytes did, and 30% of respondents thought that the crackdown was the best policy implemented by eBay in the last 2 years. But another 9% believed it was the worst policy implemented by eBay in the last 2 years. I think often with eBay policies and changes on the site, it's often it recognized that the incentive behind it, the reasoning behind it, may be good, but the implementation isn't always there. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you: many sellers say they're given a negative or neutral feedback that is undeserved. Someone suggested that buyers should have to show some credence in order to be allowed to leave a neg. What's your opinion on that?
That's a tough question. That's a good question. And you're right, feedback and is always controversial. I'm sitting here pondering because it's such a tough question. It's one that we grapple with. We believe we need to address the problem of retaliatory feedback on the site more generally, and that is for both buyers and for sellers. So definitely, we don't like it when sellers who are driving good experiences get left a negative feedback from a buyer that maybe came in the marketplace and left and had no business doing it. And that's one of the reasons why we changed policy a couple years ago, and said that anybody who comes in the site and is suspended within 90 days, any feedback that they've left will be removed automatically, because we felt that. I think that was a good thing, and I don't think it went far enough. I think we need to go further, and included in the further would be, is there something that we need to do? I'll throw out some examples for you and for your listeners. Should we... if we know that a seller's had a long track record of doing a fantastic job, and a new buyer comes in and doesn't pay for an item and leaves a neg, should we allow that neg to be left? That's something that we would think we have to address when we think about retaliatory feedback, or what we do with what we would call unfair or undeserved feedback. It's really hard because eBay doesn't always have all the information or what went on off the site. It could have been that the seller changed the terms after the transaction in email with the buyer, and therefore the buyer backed out of the transaction and appropriately didn't pay and didn't leave and then left a negative feedback. But that's one where, maybe at some point if the seller has a certain track record over a long period of time, maybe we ought to be thinking about that differently.
Mm-hmm. Right. I read a post from someone who said the policy is going to lead to an increase in mutual feedback removal. Do you agree? And if so, is that a bad thing?
That's a good question, too. I think it is likely that we will see an increased use of the mutual feedback withdrawal system because we are asking sellers to work out their problems with buyers. If a buyer has expressed dissatisfaction, or anything less than full satisfaction, then that if there's a way that a seller can, make that good for the buyer, that's a good thing, right? That's the kind of thing that actually keeps that buyer in the marketplace. And so we like that. I think that, proper use of the mutual feedback withdrawal system, kind of what I just described, hey, maybe they offer a refund or, they do an exchange or, who knows what it is, that's good. Improper use of the mutual feedback withdrawal system actually compounds what is already a bad problem. And I'll give an example of that that we've seen and that we've seen from some of our top sellers. And that is, a seller ships an item that's defective, the buyer gets the item, leaves a negative feedback because it's defective after trying to communicate with the seller is unresponsive. When the buyer has left the negative feedback, the seller leaves a negative in retaliation, even though they actually shipped a defective product, and then immediately follows with a mutual feedback withdrawal request to try to get the appropriate negative removed. That is actually inappropriate use of the system, and we do have abuse of mutual feedback withdrawal policies in place, and if we see that, we will take actually more serious corrective action than the seller non-performance policy, because the feedback system is so important, it's important that it be used properly for the credibility. So again, it's like you're right. I think we'll see a greater use of the system, and you know, appropriate use of the system is a good thing, and we will be watching for the other kind of use.
So sellers who do sell items very cheaply on an as-is basis, is eBay basically eliminating sellers of bargain basement items from the site, do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question, too. The short answer is no. We're definitely not doing that. We consider that part of eBay, I would say, that kind of inventory. However, what we are saying is that it's very important that the sellers of those items, you know, make it kind of very difficult for the buyer to be surprised by what they get, by how they list the item. You know, listing it with an appropriate item condition, not way down in the terms and conditions, you know, in the fine print, but front and center, as close to the top of the description as is possible. You know, don't use a stock photo of a new item when the item's actually, used or refurbished. Or there's a number of steps that a liquidator or someone selling as-is items can take to ensure that the winning buyer knows exactly what they're getting, and therefore is going to be satisfied when they get it. What happens often, and I've seen lots of cases of this, is that sellers will describe, but they'll do it in a way that it's easy for the buyer to miss, and then the buyer is dissatisfied when they get it, and then they don't come back to eBay, which isn't good for the rest of the marketplace. So there's a number of steps that sellers of these kind of items can take to help keep the experiences positive enough.
Okay, it's about managing expectations.
Exactly.
eBay announced the policy enforcement 3 months after the crackdown began. Why was that?
I'll take a step back on this one, too, if I can. First of all, we should have done better. I mean, Philip Eustace, the head of the auction business in North America, said as much in his post, and I'll say as much right now. And apologize to any sellers who feel that it unfairly impacted them or impacted them adversely. We stepped up our enforcement of policy, and in a well-intentioned desire to stem bad buyer experiences, and we would have done it differently in hindsight. We did, before Philip's public announcement, we did reach out to almost all, maybe all impacted, what we call top sellers, or the ones with account managers. We reached out to all of them by phone or by email. That's obviously not all sellers in the marketplace, but we did do that in terms of kind of targeted communication. We did not do broad communication. And we learned from our mistakes. We also have taken steps beyond Philip's post to improve that communication, not just improve the amount of it, but the clarity of what's in there. It's much more specific about what we're doing, why we're doing it, if there's any restriction placed, when the restriction will be lifted, et cetera, what has to happen for the restriction to be lifted. I think it's enough, but we are listening closely to what we're hearing, and we'll take additional steps around communication if we need to.
Right, and I read Philip's post, and he did say, talking about doing a better job of communicating with sellers, one of the things he talked about is helping sellers resolve problems after they've occurred. How exactly will eBay do a better job in these areas?
So I think mostly through tips. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the seller's responsibility to resolve their problems and, you know, make their business be one that is good for the marketplace and good for buyers. We will, you know, we are studying the bad buyer experiences significantly. We know what they are, and we are, you know, we've put together in the FAQs and in a lot of the communication specific education about what steps sellers can take to try to improve their practices. I mean, I mentioned some of them here just about the as-is or the liquidator stuff, but we're trying to take steps to improve the education that's available to sellers so that they can learn from that.
And, you know, because I have been reading the posts where some people affected by this policy, whether they've had limits put on their accounts or have actually been suspended, they're actually, you know, paying attention to what you're telling them, and they're trying to resolve these things. They, you know, I've read a few where they've said they have gone ahead and contacted buyers, made them whole, made them happy, but they can't get through to eBay to get eBay to actually do anything so that those limits are lifted or they're able to sell again on the site, that they have to wait another 30, 60, or 90 days. What would you say to those sellers who are really trying to make it right?
Yeah. So it depends on, you know, which type of corrective action we've taken, but in most cases the restrictions lift within 14 or 30 days, depending on what the volume of the seller is. And, you know, our systems are automatically looking for the time to pass and for the, you know, the rates to have changed. And when that happens, the restrictions will be lifted. So, you know, if someone gets buyers to close an open, you know, an item not received dispute or a significantly not as described dispute or something like that, our system will see that, but we're not going to, you know, immediately lift it at that time. We have policies in place that say it's going to be 30 days, or if it's a very small seller, it's going to be 14 days or whatever.
Do you think the policy impacts lower volume sellers more than high volume sellers?
No, we don't. We've actually designed it very carefully to make sure that we're kind of covering the marketplace appropriately, and we have different sanctions for low volume than we do for high volume.
This may be a question for Linda. I'm not sure. This policy, I'm very aware of it in the United States. Is this site wide?
It is a global policy. Each country is handling, you know, communication on their own, et cetera. But yeah, it's Asia, it's Europe, it's everywhere.
Okay. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to say any last words to our listeners.
Sure. Thank you. I mean, again, the steps that we're taking, you know, with launching a feedback 2.0, with launching, you know, further enforcement of this policy, with doing the things we did around counterfeits late last year, you know, they're all focused on trying to help the vibrancy of the marketplace. We've done a lot of work to figure out what prevents faster growth for the marketplace, found that by stepping in and kind of raising the expectations for what we expect from our sellers so that we ensure our buyers have a good experience, we know that this is going to help the marketplace. It's going to help the marketplace as a whole, which means it's going to help the vast majority of all sellers. And while the communication around this one wasn't what we would want it to have been, and we're trying to up our game on that one, I hope all the terrific sellers out there will take comfort in knowing that by taking these steps, they're going to get more bids, and they're going to have fewer buyers leaving and more buyers staying and telling their friends to come in, and that should improve their overall business. And then finally, we have FAQs on the site. If you go to the AB post and look at the FAQs and click the links on those, the community page on the site, and read those, if there are more questions that I wasn't able to address here, there's a lot that are addressed in what we've put up on the site.
Well, I guess I should just ask one more question that comes to mind. We are rapidly approaching the holiday shopping season. Should we expect any other trust and safety initiatives?
Well, we're trying to launch as many TNS initiatives in December as we can. No, just joking. I think trust and safety tries very hard to kind of follow the quiet period approach that the product teams take as well, which is we don't want to do anything new to disrupt sellers or any members of the community during the holiday selling season. We know how important that is. You know, occasionally there are steps we have to take given a new trend, a new fraud trend or something where we have to step in. But we have the exact same goals and guidelines as everybody else that we want to not touch the marketplace during that period.
Well, it makes the summer interesting. Matt, Linda, thank you for joining us. That was Matt Halperin and Linda Talgo from eBay's Trust and Safety. Thanks.